Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. Today we have JT, Matt, Head Gnome in Chief John, and myself, Ange. And today we're going to talk about the pros and cons of gaming with kids. Before we dive into the main topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. Since we're talking about gaming with kids, I thought we'd ask if we were kids when we started. So, guys, how old were you when you played an RPG for the first time, and what game was it? Let's start with you, Matt.
I think I've actually told this story on a Gnomecast before. I was 12. And I was sitting at a school track meet, and this kid I knew, Kyle, was telling me all about how they were playing a game where you fly around in space on the back of a dragon, and when the hippos shoot you with cannonballs, the dragon eats them and then belches them back up as missiles. And I'm there like, I got to get me some of this. And so I ran out and bought the Mentzer Redbox set and was sorely disappointed that there are no flying dragons and vomiting missiles or anything like that, but it was still awesome. Then, because I was the guy who owned the set, I was the guy who had to DM right from the beginning for years.
Yeah, that sounds like they were playing Rifts.
Right?
A little bit, yeah.
Very over the top. How about you, John?
So I came to gaming in a weird way. I designed an RPG before I ever played one. Then I ran it. Then I eventually got to play it a different RPG by the time I was, you know, in college. I had bought the books. I read the books. I was allowed to do that. I wasn't allowed to play it. But being the conniving person I am, the dictate was I wasn't allowed to play D&D. Well, my parents didn't know what anything else was, neither did I really at the time. So I whipped together a like 4 or 5 page Battletech inspired mech RPG that was super, super fadey almost. And I think this was even before Fudge was. This was when I was like 12 at the, you know, so it must be something magic about the number 12. And I played it with one of my friends and then, you know, shelved it for many years. And then I ran games and then I finally got to be a player. So,
okay. What about you, JT?
So I started when I was 10 with the Frank Mentzer Redbox set. I was in the Cub Scouts at the time. And there's a magazine for the Scouts called Boys Life. In the very back page of Boys Life had these, I think it was called Captain O or Captain Olympic card sales. And you could tear out part of the page and fill it out and mail it in. They send you a catalog. You go door to door selling these greeting cards, happy birthday cards or Christmas cards or whatever. And for every item you sold, you got a point. And you can either exchange the point for $1 or collect your points until you had enough to get like a bicycle, which was like 4,000 points or something like that. So obviously it was more cost effective to get the dollar and then go buy the bicycle. But in the prize catalog, I saw this really cool thing that said Dungeons and Dragons on it and had the guy with the sword and the red dragon and all that. By this time, I'd been an avid fantasy reader for about 3 years. Saw that cover. I had no idea what it was. I just knew I had to have it. I honestly thought it was going to be a book, like a novel that you read. And when it arrived, I was like, oh, it's a box. That means there's multiple books. Yay. I crack it open and I'm like, what are these weird dice? Yeah, you know, player's book, dungeon master guide. What? And I was like, well, I got it. I earned it. I'm going to put it to use. And it arrived about a week after my 10th birthday. So that actually makes today the 33rd anniversary of me joining the role playing community.
Happy Gameiversary.
Yes, yes. So it was
awesome.
Very close to 33 years ago today that I received that. And I just absorbed it and haven't looked back. And I've loved it ever since.
That's awesome.
All right, Angela. So how old were you when you first started gaming?
I was actually the oldest of us when we started because I started my senior year of high school. So I was 17. Yeah, I was 17. I had heard about D&D, but I didn't know anybody who played it, or I didn't know anyone that played it well enough to ask about getting a chance to play. So it wasn't until I met a kid in high school in my senior year that was like, do you want to play? And I was like, do I? And that was first edition D&D.
And how long did it take from being a player to running your first game?
Oh, that was a long time because I didn't run my okay, we're going to talk years here. That was 1986. I did not run a game for the first time until 2005. 2005 was the first time I ran a game. Most of the folks I played with, there weren't a lot of women. Most of the guys were much more crunch-oriented. And therefore, if you did not know the rules forward and backwards, you'd get eaten alive by your players. So the GMs had to be experts in their subject matter. And I never felt I knew the rules well enough to handle that. So it took until I had a friend be like, what are you talking about? Of course you can run a game. And he kind of pushed me into running something. And I'm very grateful that he did.
Awesome for that person.
Yes.
So let's get into, you know, our topic of discussion. You know, I think we've all had various experiences running for kids. And I wanted us to talk about the cons and the pros of running for kids, because they do present a challenge, but there's also a lot of rewards. So first, let's talk about the difficulties of gaming with kids. What are some of the problems you can face and the things you need to keep in mind? Who wants to go first?
I mean, I have stories, so I think somebody else should go first because I have to figure out how to make those stories clean.
I'll jump in. I was running a con game many years ago, and everybody was an adult around the table except for one child. I'm going to put him probably about 11 years old, maybe 12 at the most. And he had just bought a whole, bag of used miniatures from the vendor room. And he wanted to use them all in one game. So about every 30 seconds, he would swap out his miniature for another one from the bag. And it wasn't messing with the game. I mean, he would put the miniature back in the same place. But it was messing with my brain badly, because I am a visually oriented person. I got a touch of dyslexia, so I read by word shape, not by taking the individual letters and smooshing them together into the word like a common person, an average person would read. So when I glance at the battle mat, I see all these different shapes, and I know that this shape is associated with character A, and this shape is associated with character B, and so on and so forth. His shape was changing so rapidly, I couldn't keep track of whose character is that. He said, oh, that's me. I changed my miniature. And of course, I'm keeping track of my notes and the other players and running the game. And he was slick. I didn't even notice him changing his miniature. And it just blew my mind. Finally, I had to say, excuse me, I'm sorry, but you're really breaking my brain. Can you pick your favorite out of the bag and just leave it on the table? And he was like, yeah, I can do that. And after that, it was cool. So really, it was keeping him focused so that his kid energy wouldn't blow through my mental barriers and just really mess up my focus. So it wasn't probably the best game I've ever run because I was so distracted by this kid. But yeah, that's one of the problems with gaming with kids or children is keeping them focused so they don't distract from the game. Matt's asking on the chat if he played a changeling. No, he was it was fourth edition and he was the Dragonkin Paladin or something like that. So I think he finally settled on a halfling miniature. But it worked. It worked.
Darn halflings. At least it wasn't a kobold.
Exactly. So that's one of my things about gaming with kids is try to keep them focused, keep them engaged.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing because especially younger kids, their attentions wander. So you gotta keep them engaged. What about you, Matt? Do you have any problems you've run into when gaming with kids?
Yeah, the major one I think I encountered when I was first playing with my daughter was she was still relatively young, so she didn't understand necessarily or hadn't yet gotten to the point where she cared about stuff like respecting canon or playing well with others. And the respecting canon, it's like, okay, well, we'll just fudge the game world a little bit. We can deal with that. But the playing well with others can certainly be a problem. I remember I tried to run them through my daughter and wife through Keep on the Borderlands because I'm there like, I'm going to show you why I love old school gaming so much. So my wife makes a rogue and my daughter made, I think, a fighter. I think she wanted to have a big sword to smack people with. And they get to the Keep on the Borderlands and they're talking to the gate guards and she immediately says, "This guy's a thief. Arrest him immediately." So then I have to, like, as the guard say, "Well, do you have any proof of this?" "Oh, well, she admitted it on the road." "Well, did she steal anything from—" "No." "Well, then come back to us when she's done something wrong." Thought I had contained it. We had a little out-of-character discussion. We get to, if you're familiar with the module, all the caves on Keeping the Borderland are in this valley. So they get to the edge of the valley. They use some very clever tactics to get there, climb up on a tree and see where the forest is dipping and so on. They get to the edge of this valley, and the thief is kind of peering over. And what does my daughter do? She says, "I shove her over the cliff."
Oh, no.
And it just went downhill from there. I think they died in the first encounter. And they said, "Why do you love old school?" And I said, "Because you can die in the first encounter." Yeah. They said, "We don't enjoy that. Thank you."
How about you, John?
Yeah. Kids and restraint, younger kids and restraint is always the hard one. I have run for a lot of kids groups and a lot of, you know, like JT said, hey, here's the group of adults who brought along their kid. Or here's for a long time, we had a kid who would perpetually come back to games I ran at conventions who definitely had some physiological attention sort of issues and taking turns. And we definitely had to kind of pull him aside and be like, "Hey, we want you to stay in this game, but we will kick you out if you keep making it not fun for other players. But we will give you every benefit of the doubt. And you just look at us if you think you're being too," you know, once he was kind of made aware of the issues he was causing for other people, he kind of said, "Oh, wait, I should do something about this because I don't want to lose this game." And it got better. But yeah, and then there's always different issues depending on the age of kids you get. Because I've run at programs where it was a group of all teenage boys feeding off of each other's teenage boy energies. And I'm going to say a thing that's definitely not appropriate. And then it's like, dang it, I'm the adult in the room. All right. Oh, now I have to deal with this, but I can't just call them, "Hey, you bunch of assholes," because they're still like 13 and you can't do that. So, you know, you kind of have to be like, "All right, one more comment like that and you're out of my game. I will enforce that," you know, and it took the first kid being kicked out of my game for like 15 minutes. I'm like, "Go someplace else. You don't get to be in my game. You keep saying stuff like that." And I mean, I'm not going to say these were good kids or bad kids. They are 13, 14, 15-year-old kids trying to be 13, 14, 15-year-old boys and tough in the way they think that makes them and feeding off of like so many different things. So it's like, oh man, I want to help you be better. Let me teach you a way to be better. And let me show you that there are consequences if you keep doing this, you know, keep breaking the social contract and you don't get to play in this anymore. So
I have had friends who teach middle school and they say that boys in that time frame, they're idiots. They're idiots. They're all full of hormones. They're all trying to one up each other. And yeah, he's like the girls are dealing with their own shit. They're on a different world than the boys, but they're still idiots.
The girls I played with in that age range have vastly different experiences, you know, so much more focused, so much more thinking about the picture, so much more like, oh, how do I make this work? So much more collaborative. And I think part of that is just, you know, part of that is how, like, we grow differently. Part of that is how we're trained to be. Like, I think more men should be trained to be more like women in growing up. Like, that should just be the way we do it.
It's interesting that you say that because I have been running it's about a once a month thing, but I've been running a game for my friend's teenage daughters and a few of their friends. And when Reyna picked the kids she was inviting, she specifically invited girls, the trans boy, and the two boys that are probably, like, they're not completely out of the closet yet, but they're definitely more interested in non-masculine things. And she even though she has boyfriends, she's like, nah, they'd be too busy trying to date Katie. So she specifically chose a certain subset of kids.
Yeah.
The one con I was going to add to the discussion was that sometimes kids, especially when you're first introducing them to gaming, they don't necessarily understand some of the, like, the things we take for granted. Like, in a D&D game, it's probably not smart to split the party. The first time I ran D&D for the three teenage girls, they had their first fight with some goblins, and the wizard got really, really beat up and only had, like, 2 hit points left. And they walk into the cave, and there's 3 tunnels, and they're like, well, we could each go down a different tunnel to see what's here. And I'm like, guys, this character only has 2 hit points left. What's going to happen if you run into even 1 goblin? And they're like, oh, you're right. I've also had the situation where they're like, well, if we go into this place, there's going to be problems and we're going to have to fight things and we shouldn't do that. And I'm like, yeah, but if you don't do that, there's not going to be an adventure. Like, if you sit in the car while everyone else goes to check out this strange phenomenon, they're going to be dealing with whatever the adventure is while you're sitting in the car. I'm not going to run that game for you, so you better get out of the car.
Before the car gets attacked by a Tyrannosaur.
There you go.
Exactly. So what about some of the good things running for kids? Because there definitely has to be a reason to do it.
Court order community service?
The upside actually, for me, vastly outweighs the downsides. They're a fresh slate. You get to teach them. And not just like in a classroom setting, sit in your desk and look at the whiteboard and blah, blah, blah. Because it is so interactive and they don't know anything about the world or as Matt pointed out, the canon. It's just amazing that you can say, okay, this frogman jumps out at you and they don't immediately go, oh, it's a bullywug with this defense and this many hit points and this many hit die and blah, blah, blah. It just they haven't read the rule books, or at least they haven't read the bestiaries portion. Maybe they've read the player portion if you're doing like the old Mincer box set or something like that. And it's amazing the sense of wonder that they bring to the table. And that really reinvigorates me to continue gaming. So that's kind of my take on the pro.
Yeah, the bringing in the next generation.
Yeah. Yeah, because someday, one way or another, we're not going to be doing this anymore.
Yeah.
So if we want our hobby and our profession to continue on, you got to bring in the next generation. That's the way of things.
They can pry this hobby from my cold, dead hands.
Exactly. Exactly.
I've already got my lich plans in place so I can DM from beyond the grave. Yeah, I think being able to bring that enthusiasm, like help these kids, you know, kind of be like, oh my God, this is awesome. This is incredible. Like even finding that love of storytelling, because like I attribute much of my success in life to learning how to be social because of gaming and D&D and letting me test out and try on things. And, you know, oh, let me try to be the like confident paladin because I am really young right now and I don't know how to be confident. Let me just try it out a little. Okay, that kind of worked. Maybe I can apply some of that. Like now maybe I even just subconsciously feel a little more comfortable living in that skin, you know, and applying that to other places. So doing that, I think it's really important to get kids into this. And even when I've had bad experiences or had to curtail, you know, teenage boys who are playing in my games, there's somebody there getting to curtail them. You know, these are not dumb kids. They don't act out like this in front of their teachers unless they think they can get away with it. This is a social setting that they know there are not these strict structured, you must come in, sit down by the 7 a.m. bell, be quiet until something happens. You know, these are more organic social situations. So helping them to kind of understand, oh, I still have to behave in these organic social situations, even if they can't put those words to it, is helping them be like, wait, you know, why do I think that way? Like, wait, this person, you know, I'm not going to say the kids liked me, but like, I let them fight a beholder and they're like, oh my God, this is awesome. Oh, we're fighting the Trask. Oh, you know, like I was not the strict authority teacher figure. I was a little more on their level. They could also tell I was a little more mature. So that helped. But you know, it was kind of like there was that bridge to communicate with them in a different way and help them realize how they should be doing life better and help them form the questions maybe they had no other reason to ask themselves, because all they were trying to do was impress their 14-year-old friends because they were 13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Matt? Any pros you want to add to the conversation?
Well, you know, I think as a parent, you know, it's just yet another way to bond with your kid, to spend quality time with them, and to share something that you enjoy with them. In the end, if they don't enjoy it too, you know, it was something that you did that was fun together, but you don't have to always do it. Looping back to all the cons that we talked about a minute ago, it is a whole new set of GMing challenges for you to bang your head against. And hopefully some of that experience improves your regular game too. So there's another thing. What we always told our parents was that it helped us practice math and English.
Yep.
I'm learning so much math down here. Kill the bugbear!
One of the things I love about playing with kids is that, you know, they don't think the same way. And some of the creative solutions they come up with just blow my mind. Or the things that they latch onto. You know, I can remember the first time I ran, the first time I broke out dice in a pseudo character sheet for my friend's girls, they had this one challenge where they had to get past a monster in a room. And I was like, you know, most D&D players would just run in and start smacking it with their weapons. But these girls, they took a lot of time to think about how to sneak past it and get around it without waking it up. And it just impressed me that they were able to think, you know, creatively to solve that problem. And I've found that whenever I run for kids, there's usually sometimes they get stuck in a, you know, in a, you know, wind tunnel of idea of what they need to do. But sometimes their solutions are so creative and the things they latch onto as well. The masks game I've been running for the teenagers, it's like they've been doing drawings, they've been writing short stories, they've been doing all sorts of stuff, and we've only played twice.
Oh wow.
But they have this whole thing that they've got going on with each other about what's going on with their characters and who they are, and it just blows my mind how much creative energy they've got to bring to it. Because sometimes, you know, like all of us who've been playing for 20, 30 years, you know, it's like we've done this. It's like, sure, there's the creative energy in there, but we're so in the groove of what it is. Sometimes it takes a little nudge like that to see the possibility of what more you could do with it.
Oh, look, it's the Grand Vizier who's overthrowing the king again.
Again, right?
Exactly.
Part of that is, you know, we've been doing this for so long. A lot of every role-playing game is there's optimal solutions to every problem. And yes, yeah, sometimes there are like two or three optimal solutions, but there's two or three optimal solutions. And so you remember in first edition D&D, Ange, how there was always that guy who carried around a broadsword and a trident because those were the maximum one-handed damage dealing weapons against large creatures and not large creatures.
Right.
And that was the optimum solution. You'd pick out the right one and stab the guy. Kids don't yep. have that. They haven't been doing this for years. They haven't crunched all the numbers. They don't know what the optimal solution is. They're going to try them all. And it's fantastic.
Yeah. And even the slightest bit of, you know, taste of success or, you know, that getting face to face with that wonder of what's happening in the game can just, it lights up their faces. You know, that's one of the things I love as a GM for kids is like seeing that excitement in their faces as they're like, yes.
Yeah, they do bring a fresh energy. And you know, honestly, we can feed on that. It energizes me as well when my players are excited.
Yeah. Any last words anyone wants to add to this?
I would say take the opportunity to go game with kids, especially, you know, mm-hmm. not having kids or ever wanting kids of my own. But, you know, if you have a chance to go game with your kids and their friends, awesome, go do that. But if that's not your life, go start a library program. Go join one. Go to a community center and set up a program to game for kids because it is an awesome experience. And that's going to be really beneficial to kids who may not have that in their lives, you know, who may not have that opportunity to learn about D&D. And if they're, you know, middle class suburban kids, they're probably going to find nerdy things one way or another. But, you know, if they aren't, they just don't have a chance to be exposed to that. So go help kids do that by volunteering your time.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think we're ready to start getting out of here. So I just want to give a special thanks to our Patreon backers, awesome GNOME supporters like Monty Young, Philippe Marcel, and Jeremy French. Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the GNOME Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the GNOME Stew's website to the GNOME Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by the AARP, because they know how old some of us gamers really are. Well, not really. I think they're afraid to send mail to Head Gnome John. You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. So where else can we find you guys on the internet?
Mine's a one-stop shop. Just hit jtevans.net, and you will find in the upper right corner of every page links to all my online profiles. I try to make it easy to find me online.
That's great. Matt, what about you? Yes, I know the answer to this question, but I'm still going to ask.
Same as I tell you every time. Nowhere. I keep a low profile, and I don't think anybody really cares to find me online anyway.
We can still find you at GnomeStew.com.
We sure can.
How about you, John?
Well, my name is pretty unique, so if you Google John Arcadian, you will find me, and pretty much all of my internet things are now whatever at John Arcadian. Twitter, John Arcadian. Facebook, John Arcadian. Google+, I am there sometimes, but you can probably find some John Arcadians on there. And what about you, Ange?
You can find me at those GNOME Stew places. You can also find me on the Twitter, at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13. Otherwise, in the various communities of G+ out there. So, John, have we avoided becoming part of the Stew this week?
I'm going to say yes, but only because we don't have a new batch of young gnomes who have come through our internship program at the gnome office to slot into your places at half the wages.
Well, that's too bad, because I am delicious.